Let's do a podcast. Let's do a podcast. Let's do a podcast. You guys. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Mundane Festival podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lambert. Today is Monday, June 13th, 2016. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and on Podbean, the host site. If you like this show, please rate and review it on iTunes and or Stitcher. Give it a 5-star review. Let everyone know why you like it, because it will make me feel good about myself and most of the life decisions that I've made so far. You can email the show at mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com. Let me know what's on your mind. More importantly, what's on your heart. You can like the show on Facebook. You can follow it on Twitter at Mundane Festival. And you can follow me, your host, the guy talking to you right now, on Twitter at Chris Lambert. So I'm sitting here on a Monday morning early. Just got home from the gym. Just working out, getting a little cardio, getting a little sweat going for the morning, because I ate like a jackass on Sunday. And I'm going to give my excuse. I didn't really eat like too much of a jackass, but if you look at my Instagram, I posted a picture of like fried chicken, macaroni and cheese, baked macaroni and cheese, and collard greens with swine in it. And I hung out with some friends last night, went to the Odyssey concert at Brooklyn Bowl. And I'll get into that in a second. So before the show, I called my friend. I had a ticket and had two tickets. And the person that I wanted to go with couldn't go. And I was like, who could I? And I asked one guy who was being a flake. And I said, you know what? Let me call my boy. Hadn't seen him in a long time. And so let me hit him up, see what he's doing. So this was the day before. I hit him up. And he's like, oh, cool. Can my lady go? I was like, hell yeah. The more the merrier. His girl is dope. She's cool as hell. So I was like, yeah, so just maybe get her a ticket and then we'll be straight. And so I'm a nerd, so I know the doors open at 6, and Brooklyn Bowl is you've heard me talk about it hundreds of times. Really, Brooklyn Bowl should be sponsoring this show. But it's one of my favorite places in Brooklyn, I guess. But one of my favorite concert venues in New York City, in the New York City area. They have a restaurant in there, and it's pretty small. It's like a restaurant bar area. There's a bowling alley, and there's a concert area. And I'm a nerd about it, because I remember when that my same friend, we tried to go for his birthday. We tried to go out to eat to Brooklyn Bowl, and it was packed, and I think there was like a 2-hour, 1-hour wait. It was a long wait, whatever it was. And we ended up going to this other place, which was actually dope too, called Shelter. So I knowing that, I was like, okay, maybe we should get there early, so you just fucking get there as soon as the doors open, and then we'll have a chance at getting a table, and we won't have to worry about anything. So we get there. And they get there, and we get seated, and we're like, all right. So my boy, I wasn't even thinking of this. The fat guy and me, so I call him on Saturday, and I'm like, yeah, you want to go to the show? And he's like, yeah, bet, let's do it. My lady's coming. I was like, awesome. And as soon as I said, you want to go to the show? He's like, yeah, they got chicken there. And I was like, yeah, they do. I wasn't even thinking about that. I was like, yes. And I was gonna get Popeyes on Saturday, and I was like, we just save that shit for tomorrow. And we got like between us, we had a 12-piece and a mac and cheese, and oh my god, it was so good, really, really good chicken. Like the people that make it, it's like their restaurant is like Blue Ribbon Chicken. I think it's like whatever, like their restaurant is like the Blue Ribbon. Shit. I didn't know I was going to talk about this, but so you're going to hear me type on this on my laptop a little bit. Blue Ribbon Ribbon. Blue Ribbon. Blue Ribbon Fried Chicken. And so it's like a chicken spot that's in the village too. Because I remember, if you remember, two friends of the podcast, Pete Bladell and Ernest Waddell, we all went there after a show one night, maybe like 2 or 3 years ago. And it's really good. And so we did that. And it was so, like, the macaroni and cheese was good. The greens were good. And it was just a nice time. So it was just... Got the chicken levels up, like the homie Fonte would say, and then went to the show and the openers was this dude named Lush Life, and Casual Sets was the name of his band, and they were fun, they were good, they were dope, but the Odyssey, was the main event, and my God, that guy's fucking phenomenal. I saw him last year at the Knitting Factory, and he was just there with his DJ, and he fucking murdered. Like, so I knew my excitement and expectations were just extremely high, and he exceeded those expectations because he had a band and all. He had a guy on lead guitar, had a guy on guitar, had a guy on keys, a guy on the drums, and a guy on the MPC. So it's like a 4-piece band, and the MPC beat machine. And he did. I think they did like an hour and change. They had a relatively good, nice, substantial set. And it just, seeing a guy like that live is sort of just like, it almost does his album no justice. I mean, his music, it just enhances his catalog. It makes me want to go back to songs that I wouldn't listen to normally, and like lyrically, like his stage presence is great. A lot of rappers, it's hard to understand what they're saying, but you could get every word, even when he was rapping fast. I put a little clip up. I gotta figure out how you do longer clips on Instagram. I know there's a way, because I see people with like minute long clips, but there was I posted a clip when I recorded it, is my favorite, like one of my favorite new songs of his. He's got a song called No Reservations, and it's off his EP called Alvasta, and he's got a part where he references like DC and PG, and DC and PG County. He's like, and he says young, like young is like just like a slang or a term for man. Yo, you see that? Young, you see that? Nah, young, you lying, man. LeBron did not foul that dude, young. You know, that's just what it is. And there's a part when the song where he was saying that, and I did it, and I sounded like such a fucking nerd. I'm such a, I like that is the just my total fanboy shit. And I told my friends that I was gonna probably act like a little fanboy nerd, but I kept it together though for the pretty much. I did like take a couple pictures and record some of the little snippets and stuff, just to have, like, just to remember like that, those moments. It was, he's fucking fantastic, and he's just really good. It just, like, it's something like that where somebody can go see you live and just appreciate the work even more. It just so inspiring. It was a moment, obviously, you guys know about the massacre in Orlando, and they always try to go back to ISIS and Islam, and Odyssey, who's Muslim, he was saying, that's not Islam. That's not what you're seeing on the news. That's not Islam. And it's what I don't know if I've said it before on this show, but it's just like, it's just a perversion of a text. Just like people who blow up abortion clinics, or people who murder in the name of God, it's the same, it's the exact same thing, that's just the quick and dirty response that everybody likes to go to when they want to place blame, and we just have to come to grips. God, I was listening to Wyatt Cenac's new album, who's a guy that is very bad at promoting, because he had this album called Furry Dumb Fighter that's came out in February, and I didn't know about it until he was on the Levitard show, and apparently he's going to be doing he just called in as a guest, and apparently he's going to go down to Miami and be a guest for a day or two, so I'm excited to hear that. But Wyatt, one of the first people that I opened for, I think the first, D.L. Hughley gave me my unofficial first time at Caroline's for doing guest spots with him, I think in like, I want to say 2012 or something like that. But Wyatt, I did my first, I think I want to say I did my first real weekend with Wyatt at Caroline's, and he's just a really cool dude, very quiet, nice dude, funny. And this album is like really, it's really political. It's really like he's doing some, he's always been kind of, Wyatt's always been kind of quirky and funny, but he's just, this album is very political. He's talking about like Freddie Gray and Black Lives Matter and politics. And he said, had something, he said something along the lines of America not owning, we don't own up to our shit. Like we sweep it under the rug. I'm paraphrasing like shit, but if you check out his album, Furry Dumb Fighter, you'll understand what I'm saying. But basically all the horrible shit that we've done, we don't as a country own up to it. And that's, you know, gun violence is a major issue, and it's hit everyone. So it's hit the black community, it's hit kids, you know, kids have died, you know, from Columbine and prior to that, you know, but I feel like Columbine, that's the first major touchstone that we, you know, kind of go back to when we think of that. You know, that was 1999, almost 20 years ago. So what, like 17 years ago that happened? Is that right? 17, 18? I don't know, but it's getting there. We're pushing up on 20 years since Columbine. And so you got the kids, you hit gay people, and so it's killing off everybody. And you know, people spout off on Facebook and Twitter, and they get the likes and they get the retweets. It's just nobody knows what to do, and it's sad that the girl Christina Grimmie got killed, pop star from The Voice, trying to build a career. She's signing autographs, gets shot by some fucking lunatic after a show, and she's got 22 years old, dead. And it's just really sad. It's a cycle of violence. I think I said 2 weeks ago, you know, this country was founded on violence. And it just doesn't seem like there's no end in sight of this senseless killing. We're no better than places where, you know, the coffee shops get blown up in the Middle East. We're no better. And I mean, there's not much more I can say about it to really shed light on. But it's just really sad. It's really sad that over 50 families of people down in Orlando, their loved ones are gone over some senseless bullshit, man. And it sucks. I mean, I don't know. Like it's really sad. How did I get into this? I don't even remember. But yeah, so the Odyssey was talking about Islam, and then I went on a mini tangent, but that was just, I think that's why art is important, because it inspires, and I don't want to say it's like a, I guess it's a drug, like it's a natural, you get like a natural high from experiencing something like that, and I just think that's why art is important, and it's just something that, it just, that whole night just lifted my spirits, like, breaking bread with friends and enjoying like live music. That's my favorite thing in the world to do. And to think that, you know, less than 24 hours ago, you know, some people down in Orlando were doing that, just trying to have a good time and forget about the bullshit in life, and then the lives get taken, you know. So it's, you know, prayers up, and there's nothing I can say to, you know, to really, you know, be sentimental or whatever, but it's fucking sad. But I do think that should, you know, it should be acknowledged, and, you know, so on and so forth. So on a lighter note, so if Odyssey's in your town, go see that dude. If you're interested, go see go listen to his music. It's amazing. And it just, when I saw him last year, it made me go back to a lot of the projects of his that I had and really just kind of listen to. It was like, oh, he's good. And just really go back and find even more gems that I wasn't paying attention to. Like that I was basically sleeping on, you know? So he's incredible. So go see that dude. And I like how he said, oh, you know, if this is, I know, he's like, make some noise if, you know, you brought some friends. Like, they told you going to this concert, this guy's amazing. And everybody was like, ah. And then he said, and to the friends that got dragged to this show, where y'all been? He's like, where y'all been? I'm nice. I'm dope, you know? So he's just a really, really cool dude. Love his work, man. So on another fun note, I guess. Well, the NBA finals aren't fun because I have been rooting for, everybody knows that I'm a LeBron fan. And I, you know, just kind of depressing to watch. Friday night, I felt like they were winning around halftime, and I fell asleep like I normally do. And when I woke up, they were like down by 10 in the fourth quarter, and I was like, ugh. And then there was a moment where Draymond Green hit LeBron in the nuts. LeBron was trying to do that walkover like Allen Iverson did over Tyronn Lue like 15 years ago. And Draymond punched him in the nuts. LeBron was going to fuck him up. So he got suspended. Now I guess that's the big to do. I don't know if they're gonna. I think it's over. Like I told my dad, it's over. He said, well, you know, they can win, and then they won that game. They won game three. I think it's over. And then I think the homie Damian Lemon retweeted someone that said, when Golden State wins, Draymond's going to come back into the arena because he can't be in the arena. He can be like somewhere near the arena, and then after the game, he could come in. They said he's going to come in like the Ultimate Warrior entering the ring. So there was a gif of the Ultimate Warrior running in. It was just so hilarious. I hope that doesn't happen. But I'm kind of glad that I'm not going to be at home watching the game. I'm going to be out and I'm just going to not have to see it. And then, you know, I like Steph Curry. I'm a Steph Curry fan. I think the Currys are the new Cosbys. And I'm talking, and I give my reasons when I'm on stage and stuff. If you listen to the bonus episode where I did Low Standards, you listen to that set, you can hear me talk about that. And that's like that. And I think it's grown since then, within the like month and a half, 2 months that since I posted it. But yeah, like I've been talking about that on stage, and it's been pretty fun. But yeah, I love Steph Curry. I think he's great. Those shoes, my God, those Steph Curry Lows, like the fun that people were having on Twitter with that shit. It's just like, oh my God. And he could tell he was pissed about it. And he said, oh, I wish I had them in my road bag. I would wear them so people could know how fire they are, because they're fire. I heard what people said, and these shoes are fire, you guys. And comedian Sarome Russell, I retweeted, it's on my Twitter timeline. He said, it's a picture of Steph Curry signing the Under Armour shoes. And he said something like, oh, you know, when Steph Curry, he signs his shoes by saying, I got to find it because I'm not doing it justice. I'm not doing it justice here. Shit. Where is it? Oh, no. Oh, don't do this to me. Fuck. Wait a minute. I gotta find it. Scroll. Oh, shoes, how fire they are. Where is it? Because I know I retweeted it. Don't do this to me. Do I have to scroll up or down? Oh, shit. Okay, here it is. Sarome says, Steph Curry signs all his shoes. Sorry about this. Love, Steph. And it's a picture of him signing like a bunch of Under Armour shoes. I called them, so everybody had a picture of them, and they would say, like, these are the, like, soccer dad shoes, or these are, I said they're the All Lives Matter 3s. Got a little bit of love. Should have had more. Yeah, and so there was this, I'm gonna talk about that shit on stage. I ain't gonna, something I found out today that I was like, all right, that's gonna be dope. But yeah, Steph Curry, man, he's the shit, and you know, I'm happy for that dude. If anybody's gotta win it, why not him? Fuck it, they deserve it. They're the better team. The Cavs, I don't know, man. I retweeted something about Andrew Wiggins, and it's like they're like he's probably watching the finals, like smiling, eating some poutine, and shows him in a Cleveland hat and just like cheesing because he's like the number one pick, man. And Bomani Jones has said this. He's the first person I heard say this, that LeBron at the four is where he should be, but they gave Tristan Thompson all that money and they gave Kevin Love all that money. So one of them was going to have to sit down. And if they would have kept a guy like Wiggins, like a slasher, if you have two slashers like Kyrie Irving and then obviously Andrew Wiggins, like that, I think that might have been more beneficial to them. But I mean, hindsight is always 20/20, and I'm just a guy with a theater degree. I'm just a guy with a theater degree saying what they should have did, you know, what they should have done is like, you know, they should have like kept Wiggins. But what do I know? But I think Bomani's right. But that made me think about that. Like, oh, if they had that fucking guy, oh, it would have been so dope. Yeah. So it's just going to be depressing. Watching this because people are going to shit on LeBron and like this. Oh, LeBron should be playing better. Ugh. He's averaging almost a triple double. I think he, like 24 points, 10 rebounds or something like that, and like 8 assists per game. Normally, you know, if you're averaging that, you're doing pretty well in the finals. Nonetheless, he's not really underperforming. I think they say that the worst that he did was against Dallas, which was just like really fucking weird that he didn't post up on JJ Barea, who's like he's a foot taller than. I don't fucking know. I don't get it. So yeah. So I'm kind of glad that I plan on being away most of the night while that game is going on. And by the time I get home, it'll probably be over and they'll be holding up the trophy. The Warriors will be holding up the trophy. And I feel kind of bad too, cause I'm on like a mini losing streak on 2K. I think I'm like 25-6 now. LeBron is out. He's got that pinched nerve in his back, as I revealed on the Dan Cummins episode last week. So he's day to day right now. So hopefully he'll be back. And it's just really a loss. You could tell that there's just like a huge hole in the team where like people have to step up. They're not stepping up. They can't hold on to the leads. And I'm talking about a video game here. All right. All right. So I guess sticking to sports, why don't we just talk about this article that Michael Wilbon wrote for The Undefeated, this essay or opinion piece that is called Mission Impossible, African Americans and Analytics. Now, I did not read this all the way, but I heard him on Lebatard and I heard him on another show. It just seemed like it was just basically like, oh, and black people don't look at stats. Black people don't care about like analytics, if you will. That's become the big thing. Like if you know about the movie Moneyball, where Billy Beane, he was the GM of the Oakland A's, and he, let me see, let me go to this Moneyball. See if I can give you a synopsis of the, at least the movie, and then just take it from there. Let's see. Billy Beane, general manager of the Oakland A's, one day has an epiphany. Baseball's conventional wisdom is all wrong. Faced with a tight budget, Beane must reinvent his team by outsmarting the richer ball clubs. Joining forces with Ivy League graduate Peter Brand, Beane prepares to challenge old school traditions. He recruits bargain bin players whom the scouts have labeled as flawed but have game-winning potential, based on the book by Michael Lewis. So that's basically what he did with regards to baseball. And they're essentially doing the same thing, starting to do the same thing with basketball. And it's become sort of a thing where it's like the nerds versus the jocks. And the former players, some of the current players are, you know, talking about like they're dismissing it. They're being very dismissive about it, but there is a lot of validity to it, and you can definitely it enhances the way that I think it makes it more fun. If you like a sport, anything to me that makes a sport more fun and gives you more knowledge, I would say should be beneficial. And to dismiss it seems to be ignorant to me, to a certain, yeah, it seems to be ignorant. And it almost seemed kind of tone deaf to say that black people won't use it, or it just has a negative connotation to it. Like niggas don't read, like that sort of thing, you know? And, The Firestarter guys from the Firestarter podcast, someone, make sure I get the author of this. Where is it? But I follow the guy. I just followed the guy on Twitter, so I can tell you, can look. Following who I'm following. So his handle is Trill Harmonic. And he wrote this piece, an essay, just breaking down his thoughts on analytics and just basically showing how it's not, you shouldn't just limit black people into just saying, oh, we just talk about the shit in the barbershop. We say who's better and this and that. And it's interesting because Pablo Torre from ESPN, he's on Around the Horn and he's a guest on Lebatard show a lot. Sometimes he can come off as a little condescending because he went to Harvard and he's very long-winded in explaining stuff, kind of like me, but I didn't go to Harvard. I don't have a Harvard degree, but I have a Mount St. Mary's degree, young. He said something along the lines of, oh, like the Showtime Lakers, like they're like saying they could beat the Warriors. And if you think about it, you know, these players now are better conditioned. The Warriors are a team that uses, now a lot of the teams do it now, but they were just, he brought up some points that were like, maybe you might want to second guess that, you know, with the way that these guys are conditioned, health wise, I don't know, training methods, all these different things that contribute to these guys being healthy pretty much throughout the whole season. Now, every player, every team, if you're playing like you play an 82 game season and then you get to the playoffs, you're playing more, guys do get worn down. They do get tired. There was a piece that he did, I think Tom Haberstroh, who's another ESPN guy, did one where these guys are traveling too much. You know, it's a lot of wear and tear on these guys' bodies. LeBron James has been playing for 13 years, and you add on that AAU time, like these kids are playing so much more and more throughout the entire year, throughout the entire calendar year. And it causes a lot of wear and tear on the players. And LeBron James has so many miles, more miles on him than anybody that's ever played the game. I think there's stats to back that up, but I can just tell, like, I could just say he's fucking tired. That's what I say. Like, he's played so much. Like I said, LeBron's fucking tired, man. He doesn't really, I think he took like his break, or he went to Miami for like a few days. Some people allude to steroids and all this shit. He gets treatment. I don't know. I have no clue about that shit. But he comes back rejuvenated and all that. I want to err on the side of he doesn't do him, because I love LeBron. I think he's really exceeded, to a certain degree, he's exceeded expectations, I would say, from someone who was essentially a child star. Like, he's won two rings, but you know, these losses in the finals are gonna tarnish his legacy in the eyes of so many people. But I mean, I think he's one of the greatest we've ever seen, and he's not really going to be appreciated until he's gone, until he's not playing anymore. But I think that's just like how it is. I'm looking at highlights of this guy. He's just fucking amazing. So game four, he had 25, 13, and 9. But anyway, this piece that Trill Harmonic wrote was great. And it's I posted it on Facebook. I retweeted it. It's on my Twitter timeline, but it's called, if you go to Fiya Starter, F-I-Y-A, Starter, oneword.com, and it's the title is called The Numbers Game, and it was posted on June 7th, 2016. And it's a really great piece. And it reminded me of my childhood. Real, like, longtime listeners know, when I was a kid, you know, I used to love used to play Bill Walsh college football, and that didn't have NCAA licensing, but it had the players' numbers, and the players' numbers played like the player did in real life. He had the same number. So a guy like, trying to think of someone back when I was a kid, a guy like Champ Bailey, number 24, I want to say, for Georgia, played like his counterpart in real life. You know, I'm trying to think who, Cordell Stewart, Michael Westbrook. I'm taking it back. Who can I name? Who else? Kajana Carter. Oh my God. Come on, Chris. You could do Eric Metcalf. No, was Eric Metcalf? Was that too early? Did he come out before they made that game? Charles Woodson. You know, he played like he played, you know. All those dudes, man. So, Charlie Ward, Warwick Dunn, Rocket Ismail, was he in that? I don't know. But those guys, Peyton Manning, you know. All those dudes played like their counterpart. So, what I would do was I would get this almanac called the Athlon Sports Almanac. It had the top, like, 112 or so Division I schools, and I used to like know all pretty much. I used to know all the players, at least from the good teams, and whatever team I was using, I would write those players' names down. Sometimes I would put them in the roster. You got to a point where that game evolved so much, you could put the players' names, and they would call the announcer would call the player's name. Martin on a rush for 15 yards, first down. It would do that. It would keep the stats. It was fucking amazing, and I loved that. And I used to collect football cards. I would know people's names. I would know their stats. I would know, like, be excited about records getting broken. So, I mean, that, and I was a black kid who wasn't good at math, who I had the stigma that I wasn't good at math. And I didn't really get good at math until, or just have enough confidence in math until I started taking a remedial class in college, my second year in college. Rosemary Heilman, you know, God bless her. She made me learn fucking math with no calculator. She's like, nope, you're not using your calculator. And I was doing trig by the time I was done. Do I remember it now? No. But at the time, she had me get it. So I could pass. So, and it made me remember that I was a manager. I was I was basically a stat boy for the JV basketball team. I want to say my sophomore year. I think my sophomore year. Did I do it? I don't think I did it junior year. But I was a stat boy. I kept stats. I knew, like, I was like it. I don't. There shouldn't be a stigma on black people getting that, but I think Stephen A. Smith alluded to it last year, like last season, like the shit that Philly was doing, where I think they were hiring, it's like what happened with my school, with Mount St. Mary's, where they hired like some CEO, like some business guy that just cared about numbers, and he didn't give a fuck about like the lives that were involved, like the students. So, like, he didn't care, and there was drama. Like, if you Google Mount St. Mary's University and the president or something, it was just all this drama, and people were, I noticed people on Facebook, you know, talking about it and stuff, and they're trying to, you know, and I guess that guy left. I should know about my alma mater, but there's a lot of drama about that, and one of the concerns that people had was the fact that, you know, he didn't really care about the students. And it was like the turnover rate about students getting kicked out or just dropping out because of bad grades. He wasn't really looking into what the other issues surrounding that. So it was just more of he was very clinical. Bedside manner was not good when it came to the lives of his students and the retention rate or something. So I'm dipping my toe into an area that I did not know I was going to get into, that I didn't have, that I don't really have a lot of knowledge on. But yeah, I think, I just think it limits us. You know, I think there's black people that like stats, and it just made me kind of investigate or analyze my upbringing when it came to that. Like, we would talk, that's all we would talk, like Tecmo Bowl, like when they had stats, like, oh, this guy's got 3,000, I'm going to try to get 3,000 passing yards, I want to get 2,000, you know, you knew, like, these certain players had 1,000 yards, like, that meant something. If a running back got 1,000 yards rushing, that was a good-ass running back, and you wanted to get that. If you were playing Madden, you wanted your running back to get over 1,000 yards. And that was the thing. Like, every time you turn on ESPN, they're throwing numbers in your face. So if you're a kid, if you're a red-blooded American kid and you love sports, you're going to want to know about the people's numbers. How many sacks did this guy get? How many threes did this guy make? Is he better than this guy? Is he better than that guy? If you're arguing about sports in a bar or in the barbershop, you pull up your phone, you say, oh, Kobe was better than Westbrook or some shit like that. And you could back it up with stats. Well, what is this guy like when, they break it down so much. Like, what is this guy like? What was Shane Battier's career against, like, Kobe Bryant, like defending Kobe Bryant? There's a way you could look that up and figure that stuff out, and it could tell you about that player, and it could tell you about when you play that team. So why, if players are using it to make themselves better, Why wouldn't other people do it? I don't know. It was kind of dismissive. I'll have to read that piece, but check out this Firestarter post. It just made me feel like it was just fucking great. Blacks like analytics, you know. J.A. Adonde even said something about it too. Like he, you know, why wouldn't you want to know? I don't know, make you better at your job as someone who covers a sport. That's why I follow a lot of basketball nerds. That's how you enjoy the game. I'm not gonna shit. Like I tell you, I fall asleep on most of these games, and then if I listen to somebody that knows what the fuck they're talking about, that knows more than me, I'm going to listen to it, and that's going to help me interpret what I fell asleep on. And when I'm watching the highlights or when I'm listening to what people say, I don't get it, you guys. So yeah, that was kind of, and I like Wilbon a lot. What else? And it's kind of like, come on, dog. And if you remember, the Undefeated is actually a cool website. I've read a couple of articles. If you remember the Greg Howard episode almost a year ago, where we were talking about his experience dealing with Jason Whitlock regarding the Undefeated. Great. I would say that's a classic 3-hour episode of the show. If you're new to this podcast and you're interested in sports and a guy who's a sports writer, check that Greg Howard episode out. How long have I been babbling? Wow, you guys, I'm sorry. Okay, so what else? The Tonys were last night. I did not watch the. I'm not a big award show guy. I did record it. I don't even know if I'm going to watch it. But shout out to the hashtag Black actors who won. Let me try to find. I know I pulled this thing up, and don't you do it to me. All right, Tony's 4 Black actors win Best Musical Performances for first time. So every category a Black actor won. So let me find. As the Academy is just recovering from its Oscars, so first off, they're trying to make it because of Oscars so white. I don't think they're making up for that. Hamilton, which I haven't seen, is basically a juggernaut of a play. And it's just, you know, kind of taken over everything. So let's see. 3 of these awards went to Broadway hit Hamilton, which has been heralded specifically for its diverse cast. Leslie Odom Jr., lead actor. David Diggs, featured actor. And Renee Elise Goldsberry, featured actress, took home the prizes. The Color Purple broke Hamilton's streak by winning Cynthia Erivo, lead actress, but the fact remains the 70th edition of Broadway's Biggest Night made history. So that's awesome. Like, that's very, very fucking awesome that these guys and gals won. It's proof that, you know, I posted this on Facebook, and one of my homegirls was like, that's because they're fucking amazing, or something she said. Which was awesome. So it was great to see that. And I think theater, for the most part, theater and television within the last 5 to 10 years, I would say, just like there's been more roles for Black people on stage, because, you know, we're gonna be singing and dancing, you know, that's nothing to the Black actors that actually have that skill. And that's been going on for decades. And television, you're starting to see more, you know, more female leads. You know, the biggest shows on TV, Scandal, How to Get Away with Murder, have Black female leads. And up until the end of this season of, what's the pretty girl? She was in, Oh my God. I don't watch the show, and I'm thinking of the actress's name, and the only thing I could think of is that movie Shame, and I'm gonna try to get to it from here, from looking at that cast list. What's my girl's name? Oh man. Come on, Chris. I was trying to get it without looking at the IMDb. And I see her face. I'm on the IMDb page, and I see her face, and I'm not going to get it. Nicole Beharie. What's the show she was the lead in, and they canceled it, or she left? Sleepy Hollow. So she was the lead in that, and I guess the series is over? Is the series over now? I know people were upset. No, she left the show. And so that's like three shows on two major networks. And I'm sure I'm missing something else, but, you know, black female leads, you know, three of the biggest, two of the biggest shows on television. I don't watch the show, but a lot of people watch Flash on my timeline that has a black dad on the show, you know. So with theater, you know, it's just a testament to the work that's been going on for years. So I'm glad that those folks were highlighted, because it's definitely important. And I think the more you see black actors progress, I think you'll see that for other minorities as well. I think like the John Cho thing. I think we should see more of what this country represents. So hopefully, you know, that's a step in the right direction, but it just seems like the little dig is because of Oscar's so white, now we're making concessions for these black actors. It's like, nah, Hamilton, you know, the way people are going crazy about this play, the way people from all different walks of life that I know, a sample from what I'm seeing on Facebook, and I would say my Facebook friends are pretty diverse, and not just racially, class, education, all different types of, you know, I would say it's a microcosm of society. Of I don't know what the fuck I'm trying to sound all fucking smart. A lot of people that I know on Facebook like the shit, and social media people going crazy. Instagram celebrities getting sites because they got tickets or they took pictures with the cast and all that shit. So motherfuckers love Hamilton, you know, they going out to see that shit, and it's making so much money. All right, Chewbacca Mom. Now I know Chewbacca Mom has been out for a couple weeks, but there was an article that surfaced last week, came out last week, and it was called What Chewbacca Mom's Rise to Fame Tells Us About Race in This Country. Is That What It Takes? And they were breaking down the title was kind of salacious to get you to read it, but I thought it made up some. So Chewbacca Mom was this white woman who, God, is she from Texas? Florida. No. All right. Chewbacca Mom, really nice white lady, does an unboxing of a Chewbacca mask that when you open your mouth, it does a... It makes that noise and shit. So she puts it on and she just spazzes out laughing for like the entire video. And it's fun. It makes you smile. It's adorable. And it just, this video went viral. And then Kohl's gave her like gifts, you know, of toys and stuff, coupons, gift certificates, blah, 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 this, that, and the third, throwing the world at this woman and her family. Then like, so she starts, you know, then they say, well, Chewbacca mom and her entire family get full college scholarships. And then it just shows like the people reacting to it on Twitter from this Mashable post. And then like some people are like, oh, for being a geek in a mask, is there anything whiteness can't do? And then somebody writes, the Chewbacca lady and her family are all getting college tuitions paid for, of course. White mediocrity on the internet rules with a Z. Someone says, no more crazy white ladies wearing Chewbacca mask or gorilla talk. Hashtag over it. Yeah, so people were pissed. I get it, but it's just like it's fun. Like, you know, and now people are upset. And then like you see the people profiting off of this, off of like viral stuff, and they most of those people, you know, well they say, well, Chris, you know, all right, so there's this girl, and I didn't know this black girl, there's a Vine of this black girl. The most famous example, so it's basically black people the article saying black people don't get credit for the stuff that they invent online and corporate companies run with it. I mean, maybe it's an issue of intellectual property, but like you put it on the internet and it is what it is. Whatever happens, happens. And okay, that's one thing. And you don't necessarily deserve to get paid for it, but most of the people that are profiting are white. And so this one girl in 2014, this girl named Peaches. So this the most famous example of this is likely the story of Kayla Newman, aka Peaches Monroe. With two E's. All right. In 2014, Newman uploaded a Vine to show off her new eyebrow threading and famously uttered the phrase eyebrows on fleek. And so she did that. She didn't get anything off of it. And now they're like top companies like Taco Bell use it and IHOP, and they talk about this and all this and that. You know, you see these corporate accounts saying, you know, oh, this is on fleek. It's just like shit. When Fonte was on the show last year, he was saying, you know, we were talking about cultural appropriation and Iggy Azalea. And, you know, it's this stuff like this has been going on since the beginning of time. Like black people, our shit just gets taken. And we were talking about this last week, like maybe a couple weeks ago, where we talk about like white people like rapping because it's cute, or they're doing like a acoustic version of a rap song and they get millions and millions of hits, and it's just kind of adorable. Like it's adorable because it's more, I guess, to a certain demographic, it's more sanitized and the rough edges are taken out and it's easily digested. So then that gets popularized, or that like those damn Daniel kids get on Ellen. Like the damn Daniel, you know, they get on Ellen, but this little black girl, however old this girl is, how old is she? I don't know how old this kid is, but she did not get on Ellen. She did not get, you know, she didn't get money. Did she get like free eyebrow threads? No, she didn't, you guys. And folks have been using that shit. And that's the only thing. That just speaks to another, just to more about the cultural appropriation. And now now people are getting money off of it. But and it just goes to the people that aren't getting it. They're black. Do they deserve to get it? Not necessarily. Does the Chewbacca mom deserve it? No. But she's getting paid. Other folks aren't. Other folks aren't getting compensated. And I think that's the main point of this piece in the Daily Dot. You know, could they be reaching in some regard? Maybe. But black Twitter is powerful. Shit is powerful, young. And I just don't think black people get credit, but you know, it's been going on. We'll make some new up. So we talked about black actors, talked about stats, we talked about, let's talk about movies. Let's talk about a couple movies. Where are we at? Where are we with time? 54 minutes. All right. I saw Zootopia. I rented it from Redbox. And I got to say, like, that it was really good. Very, like, charged, racially charged for a kids movie. It's definitely one of the... It kind of reminded me of The Departed. It reminded me of The Departed and a little bit of The Dark Knight. A little bit. So I'll read you the synopsis. From the largest elephant to the smallest shrew, the city of Zootopia is mammal metropolis where various animals live and thrive. When Judy Hopps becomes the first rabbit to join the police force, she quickly learns how tough it is to enforce the law. Determined to prove herself, Judy jumps at the opportunity to solve a mysterious case. Unfortunately, that means working with Nick Wilde, a wily fox who makes her job even harder. Definitely some stuff. Like, I was trying to figure out, like, when I'm watching, it's like, okay, are the rabbits black people or who's black people? And I posted this on Facebook. And so I just said, you know, that I was watching it. And I wrote, are the rabbits supposed to represent black people? And a bunch of people, let's see, let's read some comments. One of a buddy from undergrad is like, watching it now. Wait, the rabbits are the black people? And then Sterling from Gaming and Then Some says, yes, and the predators, and the sheep, and the everybody. And then Randolph Terrence, three guys on, is like, no, the carnivores are black folks. Brandon from Where's My 40 Acres. Everybody is the black people. The rabbits, the predators, the gay cheetah, the herbivores, everyone except the bully. He's a redneck. Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting movie. It's really good, and like there's like the predators and the rest of and everybody else. And I don't really want to give too much away, but it's like, damn, this is shit is fucking it's a little deep, young. I fucked with it. I liked it, man. A little like intrigue and a little like there's a line in Pippin on the opening number, magic to do, like, intrigue plots to bring disaster. Yeah, that's so dropped a little vocal in honor of the Tonys. I dropped a little musical bar. Yeah, so I like that. What else? I'm trying to find. I have so many tabs open, and I'm trying to find. So I watched this. It's another thing. I watched this documentary called The Hunting Ground. Hunting Ground. That's on Netflix. J.L. Covan, the homie J.L. Covan. Go to his album taping June 24th, 8 and 10 p.m. at the Standing Room. On June 24th, I'm hosting those. Shit is going to be fucking dope. I'm excited. J.L. is a monster. I'm a monster. It's going to be fun. It's going to be like, I would say like early Vince Carter and T-Mac, Tracy McGrady, if they stayed together, or like Shaq and Penny. So it's going to be that level. It's going to be 30 for 30 dope. It's going to be a good time. And a story like Long Island City, it's not far away. It's Queens. It's Astoria. It's like one stop off the out of the city. It's fun. It's good restaurants in that area. And so get you some drinks, get you some dinner, and come on to these shows, man. They're going to be fun. So the homie JL recommended The Hunting Ground. It's basically about college students that have been raped on campus, and they face retaliation and harassment as they fight for justice. That's the one sentence description of this movie. That's really all you need to know. And there's a surprise towards the end that's like, fuck. And I knew about it, but when I heard it, I was like, oh shit, can I even root for this guy anymore? And it's always been kind of like, ooh. And just the and I'm making air quotes. You can't see me make the air quotes, but what the fuck? The punishments that some of these guys get for raping someone it's, there's one where there was like a $25 fine, or the kid, and the kid got suspended from school for the summer when he's not even in fucking school. And that's whether you're an athlete or not. It's so fucking disheartening, and it's sad. And I think it should be required watching, required viewing for all college students. Like, you should see this movie. And like, now, like, for the next probably month or so, every time I see a kid, every time I see a boy in a college t-shirt, I'm just gonna be prejudiced against them. Like, you fucking rapist, you fucking asshole. It's just gonna make you, it's brutal. And the stats, you know, they say numbers never lie. You look at these numbers, you're just like, holy shit, are you kidding me? It's a rough watch, but it's good. It's a good film. Did it win any awards? I don't know if it won any awards or anything, but it was really fucking good. Do they have any reception, critical? So it was shortlisted for an Oscar for nomination for best. So it didn't make it, but it did win. December 2015, the film won the 2016 Stanley Kramer Award, and given to a production, producer, or other individual whose achievement or contribution illuminates and raises public awareness of important social issues. So this had just as much impact to me, and it was very palpable, and as palpable as a movie like Spotlight or Concussion. And those two movies were filtered in a way where you could be like, oh shit, this is a problem. And it was actually real. It was these movies were dramatic interpretations of real shit that happened. The Hunting Ground, like, you have the actual girls that were assaulted. And it's very, it's an important movie. I knew it was on Netflix for some, I think JL actually paid to rent this. Obviously you're paying when you know, you have Netflix, but I mean, it took me a while. I was like, do I want to watch this on a fucking Saturday and eat M&Ms while I'm watching it? I was like, all right. But, you know, it, fuck. Yeah. So on a lighter note, LeBron, they flashed up his finals, numbers. Ah, shit. So postseason, I'm going to have to rewind. Postseason stats are 24.6 points a game, 53 field goal percent, 53% rebounds per game, 9.2. But his final stats, 24.8 points a game, 11 rebounds per game, 8.3 assists. So the guy's averaging pretty much a triple-double in the finals. And you guys can't take that away from him. So, yeah, so that's definitely a must-watch. I would say see that. I think I'm supposed to be going to see a movie tonight. Another, a big one, folks. 30 for 30, The People versus OJ. Shit. 30 for 30, OJ Simpson, Made in America. It premiered Saturday night on ABC and ESPN. My God, like, Dan Le Batard was not lying. And I know I sound like a Dan Le Batard, Bomani stan, but I fucking love what those dudes do on the radio, on TV. It's like my favorite, bar none, my best resources for sports. Also, I would throw in Jalen Rose, Jalen and Jacoby. But Dan Le Batard was like 2-3 months ago, was like, he can cite stuff, but he was like, this is the best thing that ESPN has ever done. This is the best thing. And that motherfucker wasn't lying. the way that they broke down, like they just were talking about his upbringing. They were talking about how, you know, how like OJ essentially created this character of named OJ Simpson, who to me seemed to be, he had to be kind of like a sociopath, because like there's a, and like, and people were upset, and I don't know why they didn't get this in the miniseries of People versus OJ. They didn't seem to get the fact that, like, when that line where he says, "I'm not black, I'm OJ," and I saw people like keep retweeting that when it came up, and I was like, "You motherfuckers realize that less than a month, like 2 months ago, it was in the fucking like miniseries." And that just tells you so much about him. But he crafted this guy that was like appealing to white people. He was not an activist like his counterparts, like Ali, like Jim Brown, Bill Russell, or Kareem. Like, he didn't do that. And there was a preview that was promoting the second episode, the second part two. One of OJ's friends says, OJ was just mute to black people and our salvation, police brutality and all those things. Like, he did not give a fuck. He didn't care. Like, he just had this singular focus of being the best football player, the best running back he could be, and he didn't give a shit about anything else. He just cared about himself and like what was good for OJ. And that meant, you know, leaving his wife. He took Al Callens' girl, and he married her and had some kids. Then he found Nicole and got with her. And it just seemed like the private life did not mesh with the image that he portrayed. And he had white people so in love with him that a motherfucker on the show was like, yeah, it's like he just had white features. And you think, like, this motherfucker in 2000, people are like, in 2016, this dude said that. Like, he had white features. Like, this dude with this afro and a big ass nose, just a fucking black dude, like, without question. And I tweeted this, and it didn't get enough love, but I said that he pulled the pledge, the turn, and the prestige against white America for years. And if he didn't kill anybody, he'd have been all right. Like, I mean, I don't know if he could live with himself by being like a real dude, not really being his true self. Well, his true self, you know, was an asshole, I guess, but, you know, if he didn't kill, like, he would be all right. Like, maybe, you know, like, maybe black people still wouldn't care about him or whatever, but they did rally behind him. We did collectively rally behind him during that trial. If he didn't kill those people, he'd have been all right. He'd have been straight. So that's, and the same thing happened to Bill Cosby. And that's why the fall is so hard. Like, that's why, like, nah, nigga, we're going to get your ass. You're going to go and back. You're going to go to jail for stealing back your own shit. And if he'd have just, like, he beat murder. And Wyatt Cenac has a great bit about Cosby. And we're coming back full circle. Coming back on, like, Cosby and OJ. Like, he mentioned them. And it's like, damn, that motherfucker's right. So The Prestige, to me, probably one of my favorite Christopher Nolan movies, is about magicians. And he had white America. Were they fooled? Or he just had them under a spell? But black people, we still embraced him because he was doing things that at the time nobody was really doing. Maybe Cosby was doing that shit. Parallel to OJ, but really that was, I mean, maybe Sammy Davis. You had a couple, But a lot of them was just seen as, I would say Cosby and OJ was up there like super niggas, man. And they were just, they let a lot of people down. But when you, if you let down white America, if you sell them a false bill of goods, and you black or you any kind of minority, that's your ass, and you gone. And it's just amazing how, like, how much they love this dude. And I think, like, you're gonna see, like you, they give you, like, Ezra Edelman, who directed and produced this thing, like, he gives you, like, everything. And it's like, I'm like, yo, I want to see this whole thing. I would watch that shit, like, all the way through. It's like, the first 2 minutes of that shit was better than Making a Murderer, was better than the entire Making a Murderer. That didn't even give you, that series didn't even give you all the details. Like, they left stuff out for storytelling purposes. And granted, you get that in most any documentary, but it just seemed like they left a lot of shit out that was like, why'd they leave that out? Because they had their own, probably had their own personal agenda, but whatever. But if you haven't seen part one of that, it's amazing, and it's gonna be on demand. I think every episode's gonna be there, like, on demand after it premieres. I guess after episode two or part two premieres. At least that's what I heard on the radio. So we shall see. So I have a couple shows coming up. I mentioned to you guys that I mentioned to you guys the 24th Standing Room. Come to that. It's going to be fun. Prior to that, so June 24th is Standing Room, Long Island City, New York, 8 o'clock and 10 o'clock p.m. J.O. Covan's album recording, me hosting. Excellent. It's going to be fun. June 15th, Ha Comedy Club in Yonkers, New York. So that's Wednesday. Two shows, 8 and 10 p.m. That's going to be fun doing spots. J.L. Covan will be on that show. June 18th, 10th Street Live, one of my favorite places to perform in the great state of New Jersey. My good buddy Gordon Baker Bone is hosting. He's a fucking beast. 9 o'clock p.m. on Saturday in Kenilworth. Maybe after the show I'll go to Walmart and try to find some Marvel Civil War action figures. Maybe I'll try to find another Black Panther. Sorry, ladies, for revealing that. So that's the end of the show. Thank you so much for listening. If you like this show, again, subscribe to this joint, young, and tell people why you like it. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. Peace.